You're listening to Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast. It's episode 5004. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. Monkeys Spinning Monkeys by Kevin MacLeod. Yeah, I kind of dig it. Hey, avoid dread by being eager. That's the topic for today. I mean, we've got to silence the dream killers by making our dreams come true. It's episode 5004. I've got a true confession. I wrote the notes for today's show back in February of 2016. And yes, I actually recorded the episode. It was part of the previous iteration of Leaning Toward Wisdom. But it came up again recently in a conversation with a client who was struggling with inner critic stuff. And since the original version of today's show, I took down some time ago, I figured this is worth revisiting. This is worth resurrecting. And I want to share it, hoping that it will serve you. And before we dive in, I have to say that lately I have been very, very focused on how we can become addicted to self-help, to motivational mumbo-jumbo. I don't want to contribute to that. I really don't want to contribute to that, because what it does is it provides millions and millions of people excuses for doing nothing, because we get stuck in this land of wishing I was somebody else. And we consume all the self-help stuff, and I know because I've been guilty of it as well. And by consuming that stuff, we feel like we've done something, when really we've done absolutely nothing. So here it is, episode 5004, Avoid Dread by Being Eager. Is the subject anticipation? Is the subject patience? Is it value? Is it benefit? Yes to all of the above. It's all of those things. I wrote down a sentence on my whiteboard. The whiteboard is just mere feet away from where I'm sitting right now inside the Yellow Studio. And I wrote these words, avoid dread by being eager. And for many weeks, I'd been battling my inner critic. I suspect you've had your own jousts with your inner critic. And you would have thought that I would have conquered him by now. Not so much. The older you grow, the more voices seem to join the choir along the way. And what I learned to do, which I don't credit myself because someone taught me this trick. And I admit that I went years and years without exercising this trick. Proof that we can learn things, but if we don't put them into action, okay, what good does it do us? We can listen to all the rah-rah that we want, but if we don't go actually do something with it, then nothing else matters. And I've read through the years, statistically speaking, you read anywhere from 2 to 3% of any group of people are going to actually do something. This means out of 100 people that 2 or 3 people are going to take any action at all. So the honest reality is that the vast majority of us are not going to do one blessed thing. We're just going to sit back and continue to consume content and continue our ways of wishful thinking. I was very guilty of this very same thing when it came to the advice given by some author who escapes me at the time right now, but it was to name these characters. You got all these voices going on in your head. You got these different people. And I had learned a long time ago that we can have these different voices in our head and they can be completely contradictory to one another. And yet we have this ability to hold them in our head at the same time. Now, it does help I think it did me, to give them cartoonish names. The advice given that I didn't take for a long, long time was to name them. Name them. Give them an identity. I certainly doubt that I have plumbed the depths of my personality to uncover them all. But at the time that I prepared this show, I had identified 10. And this was back in February of 2016. I'd love to tell you that I put in a lot of heavy lifting and I've identified more, but I haven't. I've stuck with these 10. And these 10, I think, are fairly represented. Did you ever see the movie The Three Faces of Eve? That movie came out the year I was born, 1957. Is that a coincidence? I don't know. It might not be. It's about a woman diagnosed with multiple personality disorder. And Joanne Woodward played Eve. And it was a terrific movie. Now, there's some debate over whether or not there even is such a thing as multiple personality disorder. And depending on who you choose to believe, you can choose to believe that there is such a thing. Maybe you choose to believe there is no such thing. It really doesn't matter. Because the show's not about that. The show's about you. So I don't want you to focus on me. I want you to focus on yourself. And I want you to focus on the things that you've got going on inside your own head. Unlike the three faces of Eve, I don't have three. I've got 10. I've got her beat all to pieces. 10. 10 little voices. Well, sometimes 10 big loud voices. That are constantly offering me their unique perspectives, their unique take on things. And yes, they, every single one, they have an agenda. They've got some axe to grind, some bone to pick. And I don't always see it for what it is. I certainly don't always see it for what it is in real time. I've said it before, but it bears repeating. True wisdom is the ability to make the right decision in real time. It's the ability to get it right in the moment. Because we can all look back with hindsight and go, well, yeah, okay, I should have done this. I should have done. Can you get it right in real time? That's the big question. And controlling our thoughts in real time is just part of it. And I confess, I don't get that right nearly as often as I would like to. Too many times I listen to one of these characters in real time, and yeah, I let them rob me of success. And they rob me in so many ways that, well, it's just, it's annoying. I dove into the arduous work at some point of getting my mind right by taking a close look at who are these characters and what are they really good at? And I don't mind sharing it with you, but here's what I want you to really, really do. I want you, as you're listening to mine, I want you to think about your own. And what I really, really hope that you'll do is that you will take the time to assess these critics that exist in your head. As I'm introducing you to mine, I hope that you'll get to know yours better. And I hope that you'll put it down on paper, type it out, articulate it in some way so that you properly identify them. And I'm not going to take a deep dive into each of these, but I'm going to give you enough of a sense that you're absolutely going to know, okay, yeah, I've kind of got a person like that in my head too, because we've all got them. From the person who hasn't achieved much at all to the person who seems to have achieved the most, we've all got them. These are my 10, and I did not edit any of this in order to save face, in order to look better to you so that you would think, oh man, Randy's got it all together. No. Here they are. And these are not in any particular order, but I did give them, I gave them names, and with the name, I also wanted to ascribe what they are, who they are. So the first is Philip the Prophet. Philip the Prophet. Now, Philip the Prophet, he knows exactly how things are going to turn out, and they're not going to turn out well. They're never going to turn out well because Philip's the prophet. I mean, what can go wrong is going to go wrong. And Philip, the prophet, is always standing very close to my eardrums saying, "Told you so." There is Dylan the disrespected. Dylan is depressed, and he is depressed because nobody respects him, especially the people that he mostly wants to respect him. And Dylan ignores all the signs of respect because, well, they don't match up to what he thinks are proper demonstrations of respect, like lots of glowing praise and people constantly recognizing him. And he assumes that silence or even casual praise, they're not sincere, they're not genuine. They mean something sinister, something awful. They're not signs of true respect. Dylan the disrespected. There's Ian the insecure. Ian doubts the capacity for anything to turn out well. What he likes to do, Ian loves Philip the prophet. Ian and Philip are best buddies because Ian will join forces with Philip the prophet to regularly shy away from attempting things because, well, he's just convinced he's not worthy of these things. Even if they were to happen, he's not worthy of these things. Ian doesn't feel worthy of success. Oh, he longs for it now, but Ian is insecure. There's Larry the loudmouth. Larry speaks when he shouldn't. And instead of just standing by and listening and observing, Larry just can't resist the urge to pipe up, insert himself, and more often than not, Larry's mouth gets him in trouble. Larry doesn't learn that listening does not require speaking. There's Connor the complacent. Connor is lax. Connor is often content to just sit by and do absolutely nothing, even when he knows there's plenty to be done and plenty that should be done, plenty that could be done. Connor's strategy is to wait and see if something good is just going to happen. He doesn't believe in the law of attraction, but he's hopeful. He is hopeful that something magical will just come out of the blue and land in his lap. He's Connor the complacent. There's Greg the gregarious. Greg is outgoing. He's friendly. He's comfortable no matter who is around. He lives in the moment. He doesn't think too much about things. Greg is always living in the present. He's Greg the gregarious. Now, there's also Sammy the shy. Sammy's bashful, and Sammy prefers to hug the walls, and if he had his way, he would never leave the house. He hates big crowds, feels awkward, not really knowing what to do, not knowing who to talk to, not even really knowing what to say, and many times he pretends to be on his cell phone for fear of looking stupid standing around alone. He's Sammy the shy. There's Conrad the confident. Conrad deeply believes that he's got skills, he's got experience, he's got wisdom. He knows he's intelligent. He knows he's sharp. Conrad believes that if success has ever been achieved by anybody at whatever task, then surely he can figure a way to find it himself. Now, he's not cocky. He's not pompous. But he's got this quiet confidence that if he was given enough time, he's going to figure out how to succeed. He believes in himself. There is Samuel the spiritual. Samuel does not agree with the prosperity gospel. Samuel the spiritual knows the Bible, understands this world is not his home, and realizes that work and life here, they are temporary. They are a means to get to eternity, to get to heaven. Samuel struggles, though. He struggles to resolve his preoccupation with his professional life, with earning a living, and the spiritual duties to God. Samuel the spiritual does not believe in miracles. He knows that the time for miracles that has ceased, according to what the scriptures say. He doesn't believe in God personally indwelling in him. He's not a prophet in the true sense. He does believe in providence, or what some might would call serendipity, but he knows that you can't prove providence. That's why it's providence. He believes in God. He believes God is watching out for him. He believes God's watching out for everybody. he's just not sure to what degree God cares about his career, about his success, and that makes him reluctant. This makes Samuel the spiritual reluctant to lean on God for help in such things. And he also struggles with the belief that God wants him to stand on his own two feet. And so this makes him not rely on God as much as he thinks he should. And yeah, he feels guilty about that, which leads us directly into Gerald the guilty. Gerald feels regret and guilt over two primary areas: what he says and what he neglects to do. And so Gerald feels guilty when Larry the loudmouth spouts off. And he also feels guilty when Connor the complacent doesn't do anything but waste time. Gerald will join forces with others to beat himself up about what he should have done differently, what he could have done differently. And Gerald often regrets the time lost in doing nothing when something profitable might have at least been attempted. Or he regrets doing things that he shouldn't have even attempted at all. And there's my 10. Kids, this stuff is hard. This stuff is hard, but it is worth the wait. It's worth doing because the rewards are very real. I figure in my own life that it is simply the price that I have to pay to get where I want to go. And I think that's true for you too. I tend to look at the lost time, the lost opportunities, and beat myself up for not getting further faster. Do you do that? Do you second guess yourself and wonder, why is this taking me so long? Or why hasn't this happened yet? Or is this ever going to happen? My guess is that you're like me, because if life has taught me anything, and it's taught me plenty, it's that we are not so different. Not really. Yeah, we might like different food, we might laugh at different kinds of stuff, but at some level, we're still people who are chasing our dreams, who are running like crazy from our fears, and we are doing our best to quieten down all these characters, all these voices in our head that tell us we're not good enough, and yada, yada, yada. It doesn't have to be so hard. But maybe it does have to be hard in order for us to get better and easier. I've been fond of the phrase for a long, long time: everything is hard until it's easy. It's one of my favorite, all-time favorite quotes, mostly because I know how true it is. And I need to constantly kind of be reminded of it. Everything is hard until it's easy. Think back to when you were a kid and you learned to ride a bike. Hard. Crazy hard. You can go get on any bike now and ride it with ease, even if you've not been on a bike in years and years and years. Because it used to be hard, but it's not hard anymore. I had a conversation with a friend, and I was telling her about some of my perceived shortcomings, things that I just didn't have any experience in at the time. And particularly there was one area that I remember talking to her about that I was pursuing, but was rather inexperienced about it. And she looked at me and she said, "You're selling yourself short. You've learned how to do plenty of things that were once new to you. You learned how to dress. You learned how to tie your shoes. You learned how to leave the house. You learned how to attend school every day. You learned plenty of things by figuring it out. That's what you do. You figure stuff out. You're going to figure this out too." And she was right. I knew she was right. But it's complicated. It's complicated. While waiting for things to be worked out, while waiting for me to figure things out, which means while I'm trying to work things out, it sure doesn't seem simple. It sure doesn't feel simple, and it's anything but easy. Part of my list of characters, and I say part of the list because I'm still not fully convinced that I've identified them all, even though there are 10. Part of this list of characters, they marshal together to convince me that things are always tougher than they really are, and that things are always complicated, just too complicated. When the logical part of me knows deep down they're completely wrong. Nothing worth having comes easily. Nothing worth having comes easily. We hear that. I've heard songs sing about it. I've heard writers write about it. We see there's just a ton of information out there that promotes that notion that if it's worth doing, then it's worth paying a price for, and it's hard, and blah, blah, blah. It's how we tend to view most everything that we want to accomplish. I've seen it rob me of chasing things that I would have otherwise loved to have pursued. What about you? And I've seen it rob me of not enjoying other pursuits that I did chase because I was listening to these characters in my head and maybe some others that I've not yet identified tell me how hard it is. But there are some things that are very worthwhile, and they're not necessarily for you all that difficult. There are some things that come very naturally to you that you work at it, don't get me wrong, but you may not have to work that hard at it because maybe they come easily to you. As a kid, I discovered some things that I was pretty good at, things that just, they weren't terribly tough for me. And I look back now and I realize that I let the world convince me that because those things came easily to me, they're not worth very much. They don't have much value. Writing, drawing, communicating, deep conversations, asking good questions, being creative. I mean, a ton of things, really. I was in junior high and enjoyed drawing, and cartoonists were among the people that I admired most. Still kind of sort of do. And writers, but I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody who made a living doing those things. And as a kid, I remember thinking, because I was, man, if nothing, I was practical, these can't be worthwhile pursuits. I mean, they're just pipe dreams. Saturday Smile is my tribute to two of my all-time favorite cartoonists. Jim Unger, who died back in 2012. He's the creator of Herman. And Jerry Van Emerogen, creator of my very favorite cartoon, Ballard Street. I'm not saying I could have been these guys, but I didn't even give it a go. Being eager, that thing that I wrote on this whiteboard, being eager. I mean, just think about it. Just think about your own eagerness, being eager. Pretty exciting, right? Pretty thrilling stuff. You know it is. I would attend school. I'd go to work at a local hi-fi shop, and I'd be anxious. I'd be anxious before asking my boss if I could have a Saturday off so that I could drive from southern Louisiana to see my girlfriend in Fort Worth, Rhonda, my wife of 40 years. And sometimes he would say no. But boy, when he said yes, I'd start planning. I'd start thinking every day about how many more days is it going to be before I can head north to see Rhonda. The anticipation was just, it was intoxicating. It was energizing. Being eager is really thrilling stuff. Think of the times when you have experienced that kind of eagerness, that kind of anxiety, a positive anxiety. I know we think of anxiety as being a bad thing. It's not always. I would be so preoccupied. I would be so anxious to get to Fort Worth that I didn't think I could stand it. I mean, I couldn't concentrate on school. I couldn't forget work. My mind was thinking about what was to come and when I would arrive at her house and I'd be able to spend time with her. I'd be able to actually see her face to face. Where did I go? Where did that version of me go? Where did that young guy go? Where did that kid go? I'm still here. I just sometimes lose sight of who I once was. the guy that was able to get amped up, the guy that was willing to chase a dream for all I was worth, no matter what the outcome, a guy taking some aim and giving it a go because I had to chase it. I had to chase her. Mostly, what I found out is it was worth the wait. It was worth the work. And if you haven't figured it out by now, lots of conversation about head trash led to today's episode. Lots of thoughts, lots of reading, lots of talk, lots of conversation and communication about head trash. Old, young, doesn't matter. Men, women, doesn't matter. People from one part of the country, people from my part of the country, people from one part of the world, people from a completely different part of the world, people with money, people with no money. Doesn't matter. We're all in the same boat. You can talk to anybody on the planet about dread. You can talk to anybody on the planet about anticipation. You can talk to anybody on the planet about hating some things while loving some other things. You can talk to anybody on the planet about taking risks. And you can talk to anybody on the planet about being safe. Did it ever occur to you that all these outside influences working against us are not nearly as powerful as the enemies in our head? That's true. You know it's true. I didn't really start coming to full terms with that until a couple of years ago, and I'm still working on it, by the way. So a couple of years ago, I kind of started beating myself up for being so stupid, for being so ignorant about all this. I mean, how could I have gone this long without figuring this out, right? I mean, how can you feel good about arriving at some wisdom that you think, man alive, I should have known this a long time ago? I mean, yeah, okay, Gerald the guilty was ruling. He was ruling that day for me for a while until I found the courage to tell Gerald, you just go over there in the corner, sit down and shut up. And guess what Gerald did? Gerald the guilty. He obeyed me. He went over into that neutral corner and he sat down and he did shut up. And Gerald's been around for a very long time. Now, he didn't just salute my order and stay quiet. I have to keep shoving him down into the corner. I have to keep beating him down and yelling at him to keep your mouth shut and you just sit there. And so Gerald is living proof that some work is hard, but it's still fully able to be done. I found myself telling somebody about my conclusion. I've had to endure what I have to get to where I am now. I have said that more in the last 2 to 3 years than probably any point in my life. I've had to endure what I've had to get to where I am now. And I believe it. I believe it. It wasn't just something that I said. It isn't just something that I continue to say, not only to myself, but to some other people. And I'm not just saying it to let myself off the hook. I was just looking at how I had come and how I had begun to realize that, okay, well, you can't get there from here any other way. And it's why that all of our anxiety and all of our effort to find the easy button and to find the solution and to find the formula and to find the secret is just so filled with vanity and vexation because it's not possible. Because this is work that we have to do for ourselves. Some roads have got to be traveled if you're going to go anywhere. We could argue, I guess, about in retrospect, well, was that the best road? Was that the wisest path? I don't know. Does it matter? It doesn't matter because you've already traveled it. You can't go back and redo it. You are where you are. What matters is that it's the road that you took. It's the path that you chose at the time. It might have been a good one. It might have been a bad one. But it brought you to where you are right now. And here's the big issue, kids. Where are you right now? Because all of life has brought you to this place. As for me, this is where I am right now. And I'm where I am for the exact same reasons you are where you are. Because of the choices you made. Because of the decisions you made. Because of the actions you took. The second guessing, it's just not profitable. Learning from it is certainly profitable. Wishing I would have made other choices, that's not profitable. My faith convinces me that I did what I did and I am where I am because at this very moment, I'm where I feel like I belong. I'm doing what I need to be doing. I could be wrong. It's just my feeling. If I keep my priorities straight, if I keep striving to follow wisdom, I know that I'm going to find my way. And yes, it's going to be okay. I don't know what that means. I don't know what okay means, but it's going to be okay. Because we're alive, right? And so time is on our side. We are alive enough to feel joy, hurt, fear, dread, and eagerness. What would my eagerness feel like without dread? You ever think about that? What would my joy as a 17-year-old kid have been in seeing Rhonda after a long trip on the road to go visit her if I had not missed her so much? Some of you know that we had Rocky and Rosie. We had a couple of white West Highland Terriers, and it's been about a year and a half since we lost them both within the span of some months. They were a brother and sister. And we had them for the better part of 18 years. And as grief-stricken as I was at losing each of them, I had to come to the conclusion that I wouldn't have felt that kind of loss if I wouldn't have loved them so much. Right? So it's the yin and the yang of it all. Eagerness is present. Because dread is also present. And today, as a grandfather, I wonder what my anxiety would be like for my grandkids without the love that I have for my grandkids. Or I wonder what my fear of failure would be like without the concern and the care that I have for those that I hope to serve. Not only my family, but clients, customers. I think of the anticipation of winning, whatever that looks like, in whatever area I pursue it. You can think about it in your own context. The anticipation of winning. And I realize that without the prospect of losing or having my teeth knocked down my throat, I mean, what's the point? Winning feels good because losing sucks so much. And if there's no chance of losing, there's no joy in winning. This is why some of us, especially my generation, we find it so nonsensical that every kid gets a trophy. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about, and it was regarding graduate students and just not really going to get a real taste of the real world until they get out of school. And I made the comment, yeah, you know, after they graduate, the world's going to knock their teeth down their throat because kids coming out of school today haven't had their teeth knocked down their throat. It's not their fault. It's just the world and the culture that they've been brought up in. And my generation, or people closer to my generation than them, brought them up. So who's to blame here? I'm not throwing rocks. But the fact is, everybody doesn't win. The fact is that most people lose. And we've raised an entire crop of kids to think, I'm always a winner. And there's this constant need, in some cases, for validation. And it's just not the way the world works. Wisdom has taught me that winning is not permanent, but neither is losing. That mostly these are moments in time. Winning is a moment in time. Losing is a moment in time. In my life, I can tell you that mostly the winning has lasted longer. Now, it doesn't always feel that way because losing is so painful. The losing overall has been far more temporary. I'm blessed. And Gerald, the guilty, sometimes gets back on his feet and he gets up off of that stool that I sent him over in the corner. And he sometimes breaks everything that I've told him to do to keep quiet. And he raises his voice. And sometimes, you know, Gerald is right. He's not always wrong. And that's the other thing about these inner voices, which I've kind of lumped them all up into inner critic. But if you notice, some of them were very positive. Because sometimes they're right. Sometimes I am to be blamed. Sometimes Gerald is completely right. He's completely justified. Sometimes I am to be blamed for not being as thankful as I should be. Sometimes I am to be blamed for being guilty of not recognizing how blessed, how truly blessed and fortunate I am. Okay, what about you? Is there work that you've neglected because you have not been willing to face it, or because you haven't been willing to grind it out, because you've not been willing to get off your backside and do the work? Or maybe you don't think it's going to be worth it. Or maybe you're not patient enough to put in the work day after day after day with little or no visible results. We all can get blue. We can all get lonely. We all endure tough times, and we all lose heart sometimes. But I'm here today to tell you and to urge you, don't surrender. Don't surrender. Keep pushing forward. Keep chasing whatever it is that you want to chase. Put in the time. Pursue it for all that you've got, because it's going to be worth it. And you know what? It may not work out, but I'll go you one better, kids. It might work out more spectacularly than you ever dreamed. And there's only one way to find out. That's right. Get busy and stay busy. Avoid dread. Be eager. Find things to be eager about and then get busy with it. I'm eager for episode 5005. How about you? Because you just listened to episode 5004, and I'm certainly glad you did. And for those of you that missed the monkeys, spinning monkeys, you'll be glad they're back, too. And they are. Visit the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. You can join the Facebook group if you're bold enough. No, don't. Just think about it, but don't do it. There's a link over at the website. My name is Randy Cantrell. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.